Okay, we're back now, if I can remember his name, with Mike Grenier, a sports journalist.
Yeah.
Mike, thanks for putting up with me, man. Welcome back.
Yeah, we're in the midst of a heat wave.
There you go. I'm loving it. See, to me, I played baseball in Texas, and this actually, it was this hot in football in August when we do double sessions in high school.
Yes, exactly.
But I don't know if it was this humid, but man, it's brutal out there.
It is, and usually at this time of year, the NBA playoffs are over, but they're still going strong, obviously, and the Celtics just hired a new coach. So there's still a lot of basketball talk this summer.
I love it. Let's get to the playoffs first. And as I was confessing to Gary Larrabee, once the Celtics are out of it, I sort of keep maybe an eye on the sports pages, but I really don't generally watch the game.
Right.
These playoffs have been very interesting, particularly, I guess, on the Phoenix side. So why don't we start there?
Sure. I mean, you know, it's funny. Phoenix has been a downtrodden team for so long. And then, you know, what happens the last few years, the way that teams try to build a winning organization these days is you go with a couple of draft picks. In this case, you know, they had Devin Booker, a young guy who scored 70 points against the Celtics a couple of years ago, two or three years ago, when he was like 18, 19 years old. So he was a kind of a fixture the last three or four years. And then they get DeAndre Ayton, their center, who was a number one pick a couple of years ago, and he's developed into a terrific young player along the lines of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown with the Celtics, quickly developing young player. But the big key for the Phoenix Suns, they acquire Chris Paul as a point guard, and he's like 35, 36 years old now, and he was dying to be with a potential winning team. And what happens? He's led them one win away from the NBA Finals.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Paul has been really the critical factor in bringing these young guys along and being the missing piece. And I haven't seen Phoenix this excited about basketball since the 1976 season when they played the Celtics in the NBA Finals.
Right.
And now they're just one win away. They're playing the Clippers tonight, Monday night, and they're up with a 3-1 lead, and they're at home. And they're an exciting team to watch. They're a fun team to watch. And another young player they have, Mikal Bridges, who played at Villanova. And I know, Rick, you're partial to Philadelphia things. You have family connections.
Oh, yeah.
And Bridges played with Jalen Brunson at Villanova when they won a couple of national titles three or four years ago. So a terrific core talent. And they're, you know, if they make it to the NBA Finals, which they could tonight, they're a legit threat to win it all. And, of course, over in the Eastern Conference, you know, you still got the Milwaukee Bucks last night taking a very important step towards the finals by beating a young Atlanta Hawks team and leading 2-1, with the next game being in Atlanta, game four. And they're only two wins away now. The Bucks have not been in the finals since 1974, and that was the year they played the Boston Celtics in the finals, and the Celtics beat them in seven. And I happened to be, myself and Gary Larrabee, covered that series in 1974 when the Celtics beat the Milwaukee Bucks. And they had, you know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Oscar Robertson on a great team, but the Celtics were even better.
I love those historical references, Mike, and it's like you were actually there. Oh, wait, you were.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't seem like that long ago. You know, Tommy Heinsohn, you know,
yep,
passed away just a few months ago, as we know, was a great coach for that team. And, you know, it's funny, he had an approach that was, you know, everybody says defense wins championships, but I think Heinsohn's philosophy, at least during the 1970s, was that fast offense wins championships. He was all about fast breaking and beating the defense down the floor and creating advantages by having 3-on-2 fast breaks, 4-on-3 fast breaks. He ran his teams at every opportunity. That was his philosophy for winning games.
Well, he was his nickname was Tommy Gunn for a reason.
Correct. Yeah.
All right. Let me ask you now. I want to go back to Phoenix for a second because there's one reference there. First, I want to point out that they're 11-3, and only the Lakers really challenged them. They weren't challenged by Denver, and they're not being challenged really right now by the Clippers. So I wonder, in a close series, if Milwaukee gets there, how they'll react. How have they responded in close games overall, Mike? Do you have an opinion on that?
Phoenix, well, you know, Phoenix is actually, in this series, the Clippers have given them stiffer competition than those first two opponents that you mentioned. And I think Phoenix has responded beautifully in a stretch of those games by turning around small deficits and winning by 4 or 5 points, and they've done it. Devin Booker, who's their star guard, has been injured at times during the series. Patrick Beverley of the Clippers is a tough defensive player who's physically beating up Devin Booker and getting away with a lot of fouls. And it looked the other night like Devin Booker suffered a broken nose, blood was coming out, and he had to leave the game. And he played the next game and a half with a mask, and his scoring is down. But DeAndre Ayton has been a dominant force. And, of course, Ayton, their center, won a close game at the buzzer. One of the most amazing finishes I've ever seen in the NBA playoffs, Rick, is if you saw it was a tie game, or they were down one with 7/10 of a second or 9/10 of a second, and ex-Celtics Jay Crowder threw the inbounds pass, and Ayton went over the cylinder and dunked it to win the game at the buzzer. So they've been a clutch team. For being a young team, they've been winning the close games against the L.A. Clippers.
Okay. All right. Now, I want to again, reference something from Phoenix, but turn it over to the Celtics. And I want to start with your reference to Chris Paul, because Al Horford, I want to start with Al Horford, then we'll get to the coaching thing. But Al Horford has, he said all the right things as far as I can see. And, you know, he might have some tread left on the tires. And could he potentially, I know it's not enough, but could he potentially do for the Celtics in maybe a lesser way what Chris Paul has done for Phoenix?
Yeah, it would have to be in a lesser way, because he's not at that point guard position. You know, and as we all know, the point guard controls the flow of the game on these teams. So the teams with the great point guards have a much greater chance of winning. Chris Paul is so experienced, and he's been through so much with so many different teams. He's the perfect leader of a young Phoenix teams. And, you know, and of course, oddly enough, at the height of how great he was playing in the playoffs, he went through a COVID episode, tested positive for COVID, even though he'd been vaccinated.
Mm.
And he missed the first couple games of the series against the Clippers. And since he's come back, he has not shot the ball nearly as well. However, his leadership and his skills in other areas, particularly his passing, he's a great passer, very instinctive passer. So even though he's not been scoring as much the last couple of games, his passing and his leadership have made up for that, and that's why Phoenix is in a 3-1 position. Regarding Horford, though, a point well taken, he can still offer the Celtics something. Certainly a veteran presence, a guy, hopefully, that can still do some rebounding and give you 10, 11, 12 points a game, and sort of mentor the young guys, you know, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. We hope he can do that, and that they can put the pieces together with this new coach whose name we can't even pronounce, right? Ime Udoka,
uh-huh.
Nigeria-born. I just heard today that he's the first African-born coach that the NBA has ever had, if I'm correct on that.
Okay.
And obviously that's significant in some ways and all that. However, we have to see if he can truly be a great coach with the Celtics. And, you know, the young players seem open-minded about him because he coached him in a tournament 2 years ago. He coached Marcus Smart, Jason Tatum, and Jaylen Brown in 2019, and they seem to relate really well to this guy. So that's a good sign. But obviously coaching him in a two-week tournament is very different than coaching through an 82-game season plus the playoffs. So,
but you know? I'm sorry for interrupting, but I'm thinking part of the strategy here, and I want to get to Stevens in a minute, is bringing a guy like Horford in who can sort of act as an assistant coach. And what I'm hoping from Horford is, you know, remember back when Tatum scored 60 points and he talked about himself first?
Yeah.
You know, and I don't even remember if they won the game or not, but he did it a little bit later, and he still talked about himself and his accomplishments before, you know, the win-loss thing. And it didn't bother me the first time. The second time it bothered me, because one of the hallmarks of the Celtics, at least publicly when they talk to the public over the last 50 years, has been team. And I'm not getting that from Jason Tatum. And I know how good he is, and I know he can be unselfish.
Right.
But I'm hoping that, you know, someone like Horford come in and can sort of, you know, just put the pieces together for him, maybe mentally or emotionally. He's still very young.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I know exactly the situation you talk about when he spoke about himself after scoring 50. But I also heard him say in a separate conversation, a separate press interview, that when he signed the big contract, which kicks in this coming season, that he wants to be the next guy to lead the Celtics to a championship. In other words, he feels Boston's a championship city, and he's very aware of the team's legacy and the team's accomplishments, and he wants to be one of those guys that helps him get the banner, you know, number 18. So that was good to hear. So, you know, sometimes depending on when you're hearing these guys talk, they have different priorities, you know.
Well, yeah. Here's the thing I'm thinking, though. Again,
yes.
I want to be the guy to lead them. Kyrie said the same thing. And that puts up, to me, I want to hear him say, we have championship, we can be a championship team. We have that caliber.
Yeah,
we can do it.
There are very little we's going on.
And, you know, in the locker room, it's fine. You go around and pound each other in the head and say, I'm going to do this. I can do it. I know. Okay, fine. That's great. But publicly, how about we? Because when you say we, I don't know, Mike, maybe it's old fashioned, but it picks everybody up. You know?
I agree. You know, but, even, you know, in the glory days of the Celtics, there was a certain situation. We remember Cedric Maxwell saying, get on my back, boys.
Right.
I'm leading you to the playoffs.
Right.
And, of course, Larry Bird, I know for a fact, you know, he used to be in the locker room, and he would assume that leadership role.
Absolutely.
You know, and call, you know, we're a bunch of sissies. I mean, that was a great team comment. He included himself when they were behind in the playoffs. We're a bunch of sissies. We're not as good as we can be.
Yep.
And it kind of motivated not just himself, Larry Bird, but he motivated the entire team to play harder and to play tougher. So that was a perfect example of the being included in the general conversation and his teammates picking up on it, you know?
Well, you know, and the thing is, too, I mean, a guy like Bird, and I'm sure Tatum and Brown are both the same way, a great superstar like that, When you play with him, you're better. I mean, they just make everybody better. So Tatum, obviously, is, I love Tatum. I just want to see him get that one little extra whatever it is, you know?
Well, you know what? I mean, this new coach, from what I read today, and his comments were directed at Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, he says, I'm going to get on their butts. He didn't use the word butts, but he said, I'm going to get on their tail to play hard and to give a lot more than they've already been giving. And he says, and I've already talked, and the coach said, I've already talked to them about this, and they're receptive to being pushed.
Okay.
They're receptive to being pushed harder. They're receptive to playing hard. Now, to me, that's a great approach by a new coach that hasn't taken the court with these guys yet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think because Tatum and Brown and Smarka Smart all know this guy, they know, hopefully, that he means business, that he's going to follow through with this mantra or this credo that he has.
Mm-hmm.
And the team could be better off for it. Now, to me, Rick, you know, we talk about Brown and Tatum, but they still have to be surrounded by some better talent.
Right.
And that's where, and you mentioned Brad Stevens, and you alluded to him, and Brad Stevens still has some work to do in acquiring the pieces that will make that team better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have that core that we talk about with Tatum, Brown, Smart, and now Horford. But can you get some better bench talent? I think the teams that are still in the playoffs, you look at the Milwaukee Bucks. Last night, they beat Atlanta. And you know, I have to mention our local guy again. Pat Connaughton comes off the bench. He played 32 minutes last night.
Wow.
He had 8 rebounds. He had 4 offensive rebounds. The only guys that out-rebounded him were the 7-footers. You know, Giannis,
mm-hmm.
Pella, who plays for the Atlanta Hawks. He's a 6'10 guy. So, and then he was a plus 25, meaning that the Bucks outscored Atlanta by 25 points when he was on the floor. He was the game high in terms of being a plus guy, plus 25. And he made a block on a 2-on-1 fast break that picked up the team. You could see it on the bench. Atlanta came down on 2-on-1, and he hit the 3-pointer that tied the game at 56 all going into halftime with 10 seconds left in the half. So he gives him that spark off the bench, and the Bucks have 2 or 3 of those guys that Coach Mike Budenholzer can bring in. You want to be at least 7 or 8 deep on the bench when you get to the playoffs. You want to have 8 reliable players. No coach is going to go 9 or 10 or 11 deep in the playoffs. But for the regular season, Celtics, Brad Stevens has to figure out a way to get 3 or 4 guys off the bench that will be reliable for this new head coach.
Mm-hmm.
And it hasn't been there the last couple of years because, let's face it, Grant Williams has not worked out. Great kid, it hasn't worked out. Tremont Waters, it hasn't worked out. Carson Edwards, who was a great shooter at Purdue, it hasn't worked out. So he's got to get some better, he's got to augment the core talent with better players off the bench?
Well, this is a loaded question, but is it possible that coaching had something to do with the lack of bench production, or is it just lack of talent?
I think, well, it has, you know, I mean, Danny Ainge obviously was the general manager. He thought he had the right talent to supplement the starters, but those guys, it, you could see it on the floor. Semi Ojeleye, great kid, you know, NBA body, but he really didn't improve much over a 3 or 4 year period. So I don't see him coming back. You know, I think there's a lot of pressure on Brad Stevens now that he's hired a coach to do even more to supply his head coach with reliable NBA talent that can give you 15, 20 minutes off the bench. They're going to need that in the worst way. And I guess, you know, that the intriguing part of the Celtics, I think, and Tim Kearns, you know, we've referred to this a week or so ago, is Moses Brown, who they acquired in the trade for Kemba Walker, a 7'1" guy who's only 22 years old, who had a huge game against the Celtics last season with like 21 points and 23 rebounds. Can he be someone who can give him consistent production at the center position? Tim Kearns is often crying, saying, "Let's, we need a center. We need a center." Well, here's us, here's potentially the center for the Celtics, and let's see if he can become consistent. I do like the move from the standpoint of, as much as we like Robert Williams, he's been injury prone.
Right.
And the Celtics need someone who can play 72, 80, 82 games and give them some solid production at the five spot.
All right. Now, back to Stevens for a second.
Yes.
The names that were being bandied about for coach were all on the table when Stevens picked Udoka. And that included
Chauncey Billups.
Chauncey Billups, Rick Carlisle,
yeah,
and one other I'm missing. They were all out there, and we talked about the connection with the Celtics. But even while they were still out there, Carlisle didn't wait around. He went after Udoka. So what is, not Carlisle, excuse me, but Brad Stevens. So, A, what does that tell you about Brad Stevens, and what does it tell you about Udoka?
Well, I think it says this. I think when NBA teams are screening and interviewing coaches these days, there's a lot of stuff behind the scenes that fans and media, or even you have to be a really insider to hear these interviews, what these interviews are about. They're so deep, they're so in-depth, and I think they test potential coaches not just for their knowledge of the game, all the X's and O's, situational basketball, all those sort of things that Bill Belichick would do. But they test them with regard to how do they relate to today's players. And is it a good fit personality-wise for the roster that you have on the table for the next 2 or 3 years? Will this coach relate to this young talent? Because, let's face it, the young talent tends to dictate if they're going to stick around to play for that new coach.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if guys are at the end of their contract and they're only 21, 22 years old, they're looking for the next big payday. So they might stick around if they feel that coach is going to enhance their paycheck. But if they feel that coach is not going to help them get to where they want to be financially, they'll go to another team. I mean, that's why these super teams develop. And by the way, if we can throw this in, Rick, and we're both going to love this, isn't it funny that Kyrie Irving, who definitely is one of the most talented players in the NBA, a great scorer and all that, a real natural talent, the Brooklyn Nets are already fed up with him.
Ah.
There's some movement afoot.
Really?
A lot of talk that they might break up the big three and Kyrie will be the guy to go. Now, I specifically remember during midseason, Kyrie Irving telling the team, I need some personal days. Okay.
Oh, okay.
And it had nothing to do with anybody's illness or him being sick or his father being sick. He went to his sister's birthday party, which lasted, I guess, over a week.
Okay.
He was away for 10, and I remember when I heard about that thinking the Nets aren't going to like this. Even though Kyrie makes, you know, like $40 million a year and he's a star player, this is something you just don't do, leaving your teammates abandoned for a week, especially since Durant was hurt and Harden had been in and out. So he left the team with really no particular good reason. And the Nets remembered that. And now all of a sudden they're saying that was an issue. And if they can find a buyer, if they can find a trade-worthy opponent, they're going to trade. It would not surprise me if the Nets shed Kyrie Irving, in which case Kyrie Irving's history of wearing out his welcome with every team he's been with will, again, will be another chapter to that sort of legacy that he's building.
It's, you know,
it's amazing to me that a guy that's that talented cannot get along with his teammates or management, no matter what team he's with.
You know, a name just popped into my mind from the Patriots from days gone by named Irving Fryer. Do you remember him?
Yes, I sure do.
And he was not the same as Kyrie, but the similarities, it was about me all the time. And
right.
And then all of a sudden, after he left the Patriots or whatever, something happened, he grew up. And,
right.
And he became, he wasn't the superstar that he had been, but he became a really good professional player and basically a decent human being. And I just wish that for Kyrie, because as you mentioned, boy, does he have talent. And you just, the things that come out of his mouth, it's like teaching high school and telling kids you can't say that in class,
right.
You know? Jeez.
You know, and if I could add some background, because when I did, you know, go to Celtics games when Kyrie was there, and I'd be behind the scenes, and in the corridor, I talked to Kyrie Irving's father, who played at Boston University, and is a really good guy. And I was talking to him one-on-one one night, Rick, just 3 or 4 years ago, and he said to me, "Do you like the way my son is playing?" He said, "The thing I like about my son is I want him to be a good human being, a good guy." And, you know, at that point,
wow.
Kyrie was indicating that he was going to stay with the Celtics,
yep.
And it looked like he was maybe turning a corner and maybe establishing some roots to be with the Celtics for a long time. And boy, his father's wish just did not, it's so ironic, because his father's wish just did not come true, because obviously he alienated the Celtics and their fans. And now he goes to Brooklyn and he seems to have alienated Nets management. And, you know, I'm wondering now what his dad, you know, who had a tough background, who got himself a scrappy, you know, he was a scrappy player in college at low Division One, you know, meaning Boston University. And you wonder now what his dad is really thinking about the selfishness that his son has shown over the last 2 or 3 years.
You know, it's such a difference from that guy out in L.A., the father who pushed his kids into the like, what was his name?
LeVar Ball.
Yeah, the Ball. And yeah. Because he looked at his son as a commodity. And
right.
Such a difference in what you're saying, and that's a great, great story. And I hope for Dad, and I really hope for Kyrie that he does grow up, because if he does, if he puts it all together, Mike, he can become, well, you know, a really fun thing and a great story for the NBA. But right now, he's not likable. He just isn't.
No, he's not likable. And
Kemba is. I love Kemba, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, Kemba is a very likable guy, and you know, it's funny. Over the weekend, OKC, the team he's going to, Oklahoma City Thunder, is already maybe finding a possible trade for Kemba Walker to make themselves a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they must have something in mind. They feel that they can trade Kemba to a team that really needs a point guard, because OKC will not be winning any championships in the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Kemba's getting up there in age. So the Oklahoma City Thunder might be eyeing a player, a young player, to build their team around. And they have a player in Kemba Walker that's still tradable as long as he's healthy, who they'd acquire a good player or two for.
All right, one other thing. Actually, maybe two other things. First, I want to stay with Kyrie for a minute, because
yep.
Al Horford, you know, Kyrie made those statements about racism or being called names or stuff like that before
right.
he came into the against the Celtics in the playoffs. And then Al Horford, just a couple of weeks after that, says, "I am so excited to be going back to the Celtics." I mean,
yeah.
There you go, right?
Yeah, Al Horford, you know, I've been in the locker room many times with Al Horford, and he's always been a class act. The thing I like about Horford is even when he was a very mature guy, even when he was in his mid-20s. And I think that maturity has carried on from year to year. He's a perfect professional attitude, in the sense that he doesn't get excited, too overly excited when things are going well, and he doesn't get really down when things aren't going well.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, he's got that consistent personality that you need when you're playing nearly 100 games in a season, when you count a long playoff run. So he's got the perfect attitude coming back to the Celtics, and you hope, along with a new head coach, that sort of consistent personality will develop throughout the team. Because, you know, obviously young players tend to be more excitable And so it's nice to have a personality like Al Horford on the team. We just hope, like you mentioned, Rick, we just hope that he has enough in the tank to give him consistent production. You know, whether it be 9 points and 11 rebounds, that would be great.
Yep.
10, 11 rebounds per game. If you can give him 8, 10 points and 9 rebounds per game to go with, let's say, what Moses Brown or Tristan Thompson or Robert Williams can give them, you know, they'll be a better team, you know?
Well, you know, and it's funny, when you were talking about Horford's personality, Casey Jones' face popped up in front of me. It's like, yeah, Casey was like that. He didn't get too high or too low, but he's a fiery player. I mean, intense, but his personality was such that is even keel. And I think you nailed it with Al Horford. Okay, final thing for me is Brad Stevens. Has he been? Well, let me give you my opinion. He's been way more aggressive than I ever imagined he would be taking over this job.
Yeah, he's made some really quick moves here, right? I mean, he got rid of Kemba Walker before the raindrop, right, on the sidewalk, you know?
He got Kemba Walker before he signed the contract to be the head of operations.
Right, and of course everybody ran into that he wouldn't get along with Kemba Walker and there was some friction there and all that. Brad Stevens doesn't strike me as the guy that would just be, like, vindictive and want to get rid of somebody right away, because if you make vindictive moves as a general manager, you're not going to get value in return. So I'm sure he did this with a lot of thought behind it, and he must feel that Kemba Walker's best years are behind him, and he wanted to get some value for it. So he got the best value that he could possibly get at that stage. And obviously, in his search for a head coach, you know, he hires a guy who has no previous head coaching experience, but who I think was deeply respected as an assistant coach by different teams. He trained under Greg Popovich. We're talking about Udoka. He trained under Greg Popovich for 7 years, and that's always an education. And I think Stevens feels good about that. And obviously, he must have had a great interview with Brad Stevens to be hired. You know, he's only, like, I believe he's only 43 years old. So that's a great age to be able to still relate to players. And as you know, what do they say about assistant coaches, Rick? A lot of times assistant coaches like this guy, who had a very sort of a cup of coffee in the NBA, Udoka was never a big factor as an NBA player. But those are the guys that have to study more and work harder to stay on an NBA roster.
Well, you think of guys like Tom Thibodeau, and you think of, in baseball, Terry Francona, guys like that.
Sure,
And they become really tremendous, tremendous coaches or managers or whatever.
But they've had to pay attention to detail and to work harder to have a pro job when they played.
Alex Cora. I mean, my goodness. Who's better than Alex Cora right now?
Yeah, exactly. My Those are perfect goodness. Examples.
Oh, Lordy. And I'm Jason Varitek. I saw him in the dugout the other day, so there's a possible future, too.
Well, also Red Sox. I mean, the Yankees come into town. The Red Sox sweep them. The Yankees have an enormous payroll. And the Red Sox, of course, yeah, have some highly paid players, but nothing like the Yankees. And they just treated the Yankees as if they were a doormat.
Yeah, disrespect, disrespect.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny. The one thing, I watched Saturday night, I watched the entire game from start to finish. I don't think I've done that ever, maybe. But I watched the entire game. And the one Yankee that stood out to me, and if I was a kid, I would just want his baseball card. I'd be all over it. But Aaron Judge is just so cool. And what I like about him is he's this big guy. He knows how good he is, but he hustles his butt off, and he's got a smile on his face, and he plays so hard, and he's just this giant. I love the guy.
Yeah, I think he's the opposite of Alex Rodriguez, who was a total diva, you know, a gigantic talent, but he wanted to, like, be the guy that the spotlight was on all the time. I think Judge is just the opposite. He wants to be a star, but he doesn't necessarily want the spotlight all the time. You know, he wanted to be a star on the field. Off the field, I think he could care less.
Yeah, and he's a good teammate. He always talks, you know, about the team, and he's great to listen to. He's well spoken.
Yeah.
The other guy I used to love was Mariano Rivera. I loved him.
Total class.
Hate the Yankees, but love some of the players, man.
Yeah, total class.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, Mike, anything else on our potpourri of sports here today?
Oh, it's amazing. Well, you know, the one thing, if we look a month from now, the NBA draft will be held, and I'll certainly be watching if Marcus Zagorowski, our boy from Hamilton, Massachusetts, if he gets drafted. He had a great junior year at Creighton University. You know, they went to the NCAA tournament. You know, he's coming off a year where he was all a Big East player of the year and all that, and he has a chance to make it.
All right. It's been great. That's Mike Grenier, and I said it right this time. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore.